Okay, so I'll just, I hope I try to stand here. Okay, we'll see, we'll be okay. I'd like to thank the Rebbeinu the Sholem, and I think in everyone's name, that considering the number of rockets that have come and where they've hit, you know, the statistical chances of rockets, the number of rockets hit, and that should cut the power line, the electricity to Gaza, and at the same time, the number of fatalities in Israel is, there are probably more people injured running to the shelters than actually injured by the bombs. And the Rebbeinu Shalom should continue being with us and help us. Baruch Ato Hashem O'ine Be'isor. Secondly, I'd like to say that this lecture, to a large part, is from a sefer which I wrote many years ago, which I decided not to publish. And let me just tell you the history a little bit. The Rav used to give lectures, not lectures, used to study with us, pray with us, whatever you want to say with us the keynote. He basically was talking, we were listening, questions here and there. And over a period, probably from 1971 to 1982, most of the years when he studied keynote, and even one summer when he studied the various halachot that deal with Tisha B'Av, Shivosa B'Tammuz, and the period in between, I was blessed to be there. And I tried my best to put together a lot of the things that he said over the years. And I tried to do something else, which I hope I was successful, try to present it in the best way that I could in more objective terms, not to take my sort of flip on it, but try to some extent, to show what I thought the Rav had in mind. And I'll try to get started. If you look, and you can see the first slide that I prepared, what we're going to talk about here is the issues of mourning, what Yahadut calls avelut, mourning. And I'd like to discuss it first. The first lecture is going to be about mourning, and the second lecture will be about mourning and fasting. And what the Rav always loved to do is when you have two disparate halachic entities, when they intersect, what happens? And that will be part of the discussion in Metz Hashem on the second lecture. And the third lecture, since he spent hours and hours, I remember there was one time that he learned with us, you know, when it was more towards his prime, it might have been 6-7 hours going on and on and on talking about the keynote. And I will talk on the third lecture about themes in the keynote. Now, I am not going to do in this lecture, I think I'm going to take a table to the second lecture, the discussion of what the conceptual impact, in other words, what do we have in mind when we're talking about mourning, okay? I'm going to leave it to the second. I'm trying to set up the framework to try to understand at least the technical details of mourning, both in individual mourning and in communal mourning. And Emet Hashem, as we begin to see what we're up against, then I will try to take it to the next level in the next lecture. But what I think I learned from the Rav, and there might be some people who might deny it, is that all conceptual overviews are based on texts which exist. In other words, it's not that we're sitting back and deciding that if we would be the members who sat in the Talmud and we write in the Talmud what we would write. We want to see what they said and have in front of us the collective writings of those, the authors of the Talmud and other later texts, and then based on that, we're going to try to come to certain conclusions about things. But let's just see what's in front of us. So if you look at the first text that's in front of us, you find the Talmud tells us there's something called new morning, which is new morning is something, a tragic, sudden event of a death of Rachman al-Islam, of one of our close relatives. That's called new mourning. And we know something called Shiva, and we'll see about it, okay? That's called new mourning, or Avelut Chadasha. However, there's something called Avelut Ishana, okay? This probably, I don't know if it's better to call it old mourning or mourning for historical tragedies, but it's not on something which occurred yesterday or the day before, might have occurred thousands of years before. And that's what our sages call old mourning or Avelut Yishana. Then there's something else happening over here. We know of what we know of Avelut, of a tragedy that occurred to someone, that one of his relatives might have passed away. Our sages refer to it as Avelut Diyachid, because it's very individual. The community is not mourning the individual tragedy. It's the individuals or those relatives who were close to that person who was mourning that individual. However, when you're dealing with a historical tragedy, a tragedy of cosmic magnitude, you're not dealing with an individual who's mourning, you're dealing with a community that's mourning. So when we look at individual avelus, the avelus of a yochid, on one hand, the avelus of an individual on a present tragedy, the avelut chadasha, we're looking at it as the avelut of an individual. Historical tragedy is we're looking at the avelut not only that occurred millennia ago, but also a tragedy of the community at large. And interesting, which also I will take up much more, is when you talk about the community, and we talk about what the Rav used to call the covenantal community, the community that had a brit, a covenant with Ribbono Shel'olam, with God, you're not talking about a historical entity, historical community at any given moment. You're not talking about the historical community of today, not about yesterday, not about the historical community at the time of the Churban HaBayis, the destruction of the temple, but you're talking about looking at the whole globus, the whole Jewish community from the time of our father Abraham, when he entered into the covenant with God, ad kiyovo Shiloh, until the time of the Messiah. That is what the Rav called the covenantal community, and that's the community we're talking about. It's above time, and it's a community which has a large a large, it constitutes many, many people, a very large population. So here, Rav Ashi says something which is slightly enigmatic. He has a double sentence over here, like there is a difference between new avelut, new mourning, and old mourning, and there is a difference between the mourning of a community and the mourning of an individual. That's what the words say. If you look at the statement, it's very strange, because what the statement really is saying, that there are two themes going on at the same time. When we want to differentiate between communal tragedy and individual tragedy, we're differentiating not only of when it occurred, is it something that occurred now, or it's a historical tragedy, in one hand, but we'll also differentiate between who are the mourners. Is the community at large the mourner throughout the generations, or is it just an individual? What? Mr. Shem, you know, if I wouldn't be talking about that, then I'm the wrong person to be here. And Mr. Shem, I will deal with it, okay? And if not, you can throw the eggs at the end, okay? So the first thing that I'd like to point out are these as being two disparate themes a priori. Are they going in the same direction? It's two reasons to say the same thing, or it's a reason to say this way and a reason to say the other way. In other words, could each one of these statements have a different conclusion? And, you know, this begins to see what actually can happen over here. And let me just show you something. For example, Rashi, and we have to be very thankful for Rashi, because, I don't know, I can only speak for myself. My abilities in Aramaic are not great, and the Talmud would not be a book that I could even attempt to study without the aid of a person who had, what can I say? Well, it's almost supernatural talent in interpreting a text, dealing with a language which is certainly foreign to me. What his abilities in Aramaic were, I'm not discussing now. I'll leave that to others. But whatever it is, if you look at the way Rashi deals with this, you look in that part, oh, I see the bold doesn't come. You don't see the difference between what's in bold and what's not in bold. Yes. You do? You do see it, or I don't see it. Okay, so it doesn't make a difference. In my thing over here, it's not that much. It's not. You see, it says, Sha'ani bein avelut chadasha de tishabov, Dehavi avelut yishana ve'avelut derabim. What he does is put the two things together. Tisha B'Av, or the whole avelus from starting from Shivas B'Talmud, we'll talk about, is somehow more lenient. And there are two reasons, and both reasons mentioned in the Talmud are separate reasons why we look at the avelus as being more lenient. One of them is that it's a historical tragedy. It's not something that occurred to me now. The emotional impact on me is not the same. Avelut yishana. And secondly, it's avelut derabim. There are many people involved in the avelut. So what I want to tell you something is, a lot of people, I want to use a certain saying which a lot of people are familiar with, and I was just astounded. I just wanted to see what's going on in scholarship, okay? So there's such a thing as, people probably know this saying, Tzorat Rabim Hatzi Nechama, that the tragedy of the community itself is half of a bereavement, for half of her, the somehow telling us that it's okay, it's okay, it will be okay. It's what we call nechama. Okay. Now I looked, and I saw many tshuvot. They referred to it as a maimah chazal, an expression of the sages. Okay. There's no such expression. It's what we call a pitgam. It's a saying. Okay. In fact, I finally went down and looked at the, finally found this someone of stature who actually discusses and deal with the issue. There's a tshuva from the Radvaz, that's many, many centuries ago. He lived, probably was somehow, I think, a cousin of the Ari, who was the time of the Ari. He might probably, I would assume, that it's 15th century, or maybe 16th century, okay. He writes that this is a pitgam, and he says it's not, the people say this in the name of our sages, but we have no idea of where it comes from, okay. And he does a lot of work on this, and at the end of the tshuva, it's in Yalkut HaChinuchi, Siman Lamed Aleph, at the end of the tshuva, he says, Ke'et Matzati, he says, maybe it's a Medrash Rabbah, that it says in Devorim, Batzal Lecho Me'ucho, U'metzaucho, when there's a tragedy, Omer Bishua, B'Shem Rabbi Akiva, Yehuda B'Shem Rabbi Akiva, Kol Tzora Shehi Shel Yochit Tzora, any tragedy that's of an individual is a tragedy. She'eino shel yochid, that's not of an individual, eino tzora, is not a tragedy. So he claims this medrash is the source, maybe, for this. But it's a very important thing, that it seems that if other people are involved in the tragedy, it's not only an individual, that itself somehow sweetens it, if you may say, and makes it bearable. So this is what Rashi's saying, that since the Avelut, the mourning of Tisha B'Av, is only from a historical nature, it's not new, it's old, and it's Avelut to Rabim, there's so many people who are mourners on what happened to the temple and everything else. So therefore, the mourning is not as intense as the mourning of an individual, and therefore the halachot, the dinim, the various statutes that our sages have subscribed to Tisha B'Av are more lenient than regular avelut. That is Rashi's opinion, okay? Now, what I'm gonna do is, usually we go to Tesis, Tosafot, but I'm going to skip, and that really is the next slide, and I'm going to show you that you can do the exact, at least you can do the exact opposite, okay? If you look over here, the Vilna Gaon and his commentary on Yoredeya, what he basically claims is that the Rambam does just the opposite. He says that Avelut de Rabim and Avelut Yishono is more intense. And that you see at the beginning, he says that it's more intense. It is true that it's different, but both issues that the Talmud mentions are to explain that it's more intense. So now I just showed you there are two approaches. One approach, Rashi says that it's more lenient. The Rambam says that it's more intense. Now I want to explain to you something. Probably what it means, but we'll see later, that it might be more than that, that it's more intense, that since people think, ah, something happened thousands of years ago, yeah, there's so many people involved, so, you know, we'll have to get involved in this. So in order to make sure that people get involved and to help them get involved, we'll explain that to you, our sages made it more intense. Okay. However, the most interesting thing is what Tosafot does. Tosafot claim, and this is Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam as known as the the revolutionary of the Baalei Tosafot, the person who moved into trying to understand all the texts of the Talmud and making it all fit together. Rabbeinu Tam says that these two disparate reasons come to opposite conclusions. The rabbim, avela to rabbim of the community, is the reason to make it more intense. And on the other hand, historical avelut is the reason to make it more lenient. And depending upon the halachic issue, we'll come to different conclusions on different issues. And Rav Ashi wants to give us the general rule, and there's no really general rule. You have to look at each individual case and see whether you should apply the issue that it's communal avelut or individual avelut on one side, or is it historical avelut or new avelut, okay? That is what we have in front of us. Now, what I like to do is really work a lot on Tosafot, because that could be our periscope into trying to understand a lot of what's going on over here. So if you look at the Tosafot over here, it says, Shani ben avelut chadasha she'osru le'ores. So it seems, which we don't know, you see, you have to understand that the way we get married today is not the way they got married. It is, but the timeline is a little different. We take a timeline of 12 months and we press it into about 15 minutes, depending upon how many different people are marching down the aisle or whatever. You see, at the time of our sages, or the way the Torah describes it, the way you marry a woman, okay, at least the first stage, is to give her a ring, some type of, to give her an item, which we usually use a ring. And then the marriage proper, then they get time, the husband gets time to prepare the house, the wife gets time to prepare a wardrobe, and everyone, and it might even take 12 months. And then there's something called chuppah and the su'in, okay? The question is, and what we call engagement didn't have that much meaning in terms of our sages, okay? It was called shiduchim, but what the Hebrew term of erusin, interesting, that in the technical term in the Talmud is referring to marrying the young maiden with giving her the ring, okay? And we call it erusin because that was equivalent to an engagement then, but you really married. Now the engagement is just by word or by document, but not by real marriage. So the question is, could someone in the middle of Shiva'ah get married, just giving the ring? And can someone on Tisha B'Av give a ring and marry a woman? So Tosafot claims that it's different. The avelut chadasha she'osu li'ores, he says that if one's relative passed away and he has to sit what we call Shiva, he cannot get married, give what our sages called erusin, give a ring, during Shiva. However, Tosfot claim, in Avelut Yishana, you're allowed to give a ring. Even on Tisha B'Av, you can get married on Tisha B'Av, according to Tosfot. I'm not talking about the chuppah and what we call nesulin or whatever is afterwards, but plain just saying, Harei at mikudeshet li betabas zo kedat Moshe v'Yisrael, you are married to me, you are sanctified to me as my wife, that you can do on Tisha B'Av. That's what Taisa says. If someone would come to you, everyone is so rigid in the way they look at things. If someone would come and say to you that you can get married on Tisha B'Av, you know, you look at the person like, you know, he's from a different strand of religious strand. But that's what Tosafot says. And then the world switches and turns topsy-turvy upside down. Then it says, look at the next thing. Uvabelut derabim, and when you're talking about the communal mourning, yesh lahachmir tfei, you have to be more stringent. Le'inyin masu matan, doing business. You're allowed to do business. Me'avelut deyochid. Debo masu, in doing business, public business, it's more stringent on Tisha B'Av and the period before Tisha B'Av than during regular Avelos. And this is what I want to talk about. Why is it, and what are the various strands over here in this Avela to be able to understand what is going on? That's what we're here today for. So if you look over here, he says something at the end, to a first few lines, v'tzoch loyma, de'bavelut de'rabim yesh lahach menami, not only in doing business, but also in washing, bekibus. The kibus nami, dover shel fahesia. Okay? Now, you have to understand, they didn't wash in the way we wash, in washing machines, okay? And you'll ask your local Orthodox rabbi or whatever rabbi you deal with whether things should change today. But they used to wash and hang their wash out. You know, don't hang your laundry out in public. That's what they used to do. So that's why it's called something which has to deal with the community, the rabbim. And that's what it says. Debavelut, debekibus, nami dovashel pahesia, shelo yehu kulam oiskin lechabes, that everyone should be washing the clothes, ule saper, and to take haircuts, ule yapos atzmom, and if everyone's involved in making themselves look, you know, tailor perfect, it will come out venirin. It's as if they're not interested in mourning. If everyone now, during, let's say, the 9 days or the week that Tisha B'Av falls out, will be running around and washing their clothes and taking haircuts and making themselves very presentable, this is a very important word, venirim she'en. Now, I want to focus on this word. Okay. Everyone knows there's a principle in the Talmud. It's called marit ayin, maris ayin. It's you shouldn't do X, Y, and Z because people shouldn't suspect you that you're really doing. You're doing X, and a person will suspect that you're really doing Z. Okay? So that's called marit ayin. The question is this because shelo yunirin, that we're afraid that what people are going to say, or there's something more going on over here? Let me show you something now. Here is the Talmud in Ta'anit, on Daf Chavtet. Also lechabes lifnei Tisha B'Av, afil lohaniach le'acha Tisha B'Av. In the week before Tisha B'Av, from Shabbos until Tisha B'Av, one is not allowed to wash clothes, okay? But interesting, he's not allowed to wash clothes. See, during Avelut, the problem of washing clothes is because you're going to wear them. Because you're supposed to look ragged, manuvel, nevel. You're supposed to look unkempt, as they would say, okay? That's why you don't wash your clothes, okay? Here, it's not talking about washing clothes to wear. It's talking about washing clothes to put away. So this is not even under the rabbinic prohibition of washing clothes. It would be prohibited during Avelut for different reasons. The Ramban claims in Torah to Adam, in his writings on Avelut, that it's prohibited because of melacha, because one is not allowed to be involved in work during Avelut, during the first 3 days. Okay? So during Avelut Chadasha, it would be also to wash clothes in order to leave them. But after the first 3 days, you can have other people do melacha for you, and you can have it done. You can wash in order to put away. And the truth is, even Tisha B'Av, we'll find later, and we'll see, the Ramban claims it's only after the first, like Avelut, after the first 3 days. So then why in the world are we enjoined not to wash our clothes, even to put them away? So comes Rashi and says, Lechabes ulohaniach, kidei shiilbo shliach hazman, to wear them after. Li'acha tishbav, I want to wear them next week. I have a wedding. I want to be ready. There's so much work. Also, one is prohibited. Dinire kimasich dato, she'oisech bekibus begodim. Because he's involved, it looks like he's not interested, okay? However, is this marit ayin, maris ayin, or this is something different over here? And that's what I want to focus on. Okay, now. It could be that Rashi might mean that it's marit ayin, and I have no problem with it. Because if you call Rashi's opinion that basically Avelus derabim and Avelut Yishana is more lenient than regular Avelus. And since in regular Avelut, I'm really allowed to wash in order to use it later, for Tisha B'Av I also should be allowed. Correct? Correct? We just established, let's go over, we established a principle, according to Rashi, that Avelut D'Yochid and Avelut D'Rabim and Avelut Yishana is more keel, is more lenient, okay? So this issue which he's dealing with, L'Chabes Eloniach, during the Shavua Shechal, the week before Tisha B'Av, is talking about Avelut Yishana and Avelut Rabim. So according to Rashi, it's more lenient. And we know that during Avelut, you're allowed to wash. So here I can imagine, according to Rashi, you can say that Nirin is a problem of Maris Ayin, and Betoret Avelut, there's no problem. Rashi's using the word Nirin to explain why it's not a problem of Avelut. You see, you have to ask yourself, can I prohibit this because of Avelut or not? If you look back at Tesis, Tesis prohibited this, the washing, because of Avelut, because of communal Avelut. Rashi can't do that. So the Nirin in Rashi is only a Marisayin. He's not interested. But I want to tell you that Tesis has a whole different take on this. Because Tesis says, since it's Nirin, we're enjoined because of the Avelut, the mourning itself. What does this mean? You see, we have to ask ourselves a simple question. When we talked about Avelut Derabim and we defined it as the community, okay, and we were talking about a community, I introduced what the Rav Zichrono Livracha used to call the covenantal community, okay? You're talking about a community which extends over millennia, from the time of our father Abraham until the Messianic era. So you're talking about a lot of people, a lot of people who are not with us, a lot of people who are not yet with us, and a lot of people who are with us today. Now, when you're talking about Avelut Derabim, okay, of a community, what exactly are you looking for? Are you looking for many people being mourning, becoming mourning? Or are you looking at a community as a chaticha achas, as one entity coming together and having what's called a communal mourning? It's not the whole is equal to the sum of its parts, but the whole becomes greater than the sum of its parts. The whole community being involved in mourning creates a new entity called Avelut Derabim. Once you're prepared to do this, then you can imagine that the issue of Nirin, that what appears to another person might not be just an issue of Marit Ayin, what appears to me that someone is not interested in the Avelut, but it's much more than that. He really is affecting the community, because the whole community as a whole is not involved in the Avelus. And that is what we're interested in, according to Tesis. Then you can imagine that the problem of lechabes ulaniach, hanging my laundry out in my backyard, I'm telling the community I'm not interested. And that's exactly what Chazal didn't want. It's the community as a unique unit. The covenant of the community is asked to everyone to extend to each other their hands and to mourn together. So even though, interesting, the words are the same, but because of Rashi's opinion of the way he said it, in that Avelus Derabim is keel, then you must say that the reason that we are enjoined is not because of Avelut, but because Marit Ayin. It's just people will say that he's not interested. However, according to Tesvot, who introduces this as the nucleus of what Avelut the Tisha B'Av is about, well, we're trying to say that it's a community that's mourning, not individuals. It's a whole different take. Nirin has a whole different meaning over here. And that's also the issue of Masumat. What the Mishnah has told us is that, we'll see about this as time goes on, that from Rosh Chodesh Av, from the beginning of the month of Av until Tisha B'Av, we enjoin to be very active in public enterprise, in doing business, okay? So Tosfos said, the problem, if you look at this Tosfos, the problem is because you look on the fourth line over here, im yasku bipragmatia, look, see, that's even the third line in the middle. The masu matan shudovet shel pahesia, im yasku bipragmatia kol hayom, if people mivav yovou v'yoymu she'en choshen l'sabel al Yerushalayim. And it's an issue of a community avelut. And we have to have the whole community at large involved in the avelut. So this is a new principle. See, Tosfos has done an amazing thing. Not only has he said that the two principles that our sages that I've mentioned in times of avelut, of yochid and rabim, as opposed individual and community, as opposed to historical and present tragedy, not only they're two different principles, and not only they go two different ways, but this forces Tesis to give the issue of what avelus derabim new dimensions. There's a new entity called the community being involved in Avelut. Now I want to show you something very interesting. How this is what you asked me, Ma Nafkamina. Okay? Now we'll see. So I think it was Nafkamina's get itself, but we'll see more. And this we'll see one after the next. Now. Get back to this, maybe we'll see. Let's just do this now. Yeah, let's do this. There's a very interesting thing over here, okay? The Gemara tells us, and maybe we'll speak about this more next week, that Tisha B'Av is a Tainis Tzibur, is a community fast. In fact, the Talmud said, Ain't tanis sibo bevavel el Tisha B'Av. The only real tanis sibo is Tisha B'Av. The only community fast is Tisha B'Av. Okay, we'll see about that. But you see, my issue is, it's also Tisha B'Av is community mourning, okay? Now, our sages say something very interesting. Our sages say that in a plain fast day, they were very lenient about pregnant women and women who are nursing fasting. And they said they don't have to fast. Even though the truth is, well, most of Israelis was very makbid, you know, was very, that they should fast, the Rav always say in the name of the Zayd Rab Chaim, Rab Chaim always used to tell Ubois Umanikes, pregnant women and nursing women, not to fast during regular fast days. Okay, Poseidon. However, the Talmud says that on Tisha B'Av they have to fast. Okay. Why? Because it's a Tanis Tzibur. Okay? It's a fast day of the community, and they are part of the community. And you cannot legislate on the community as an entirety unless you include the whole community. So Ubot Umonikot have to fast. Now I want to show you something that happens about the Avelut. Look at this expression, look at this this quote of the Talmud in Ta'anit on the Flamin Amud Beit. Reb Yehuda mechayev bekfiat hamita. Reb Yehuda said that on Tisha B'Av you have to turn. They used to, at the time of our sages, they used to turn their beds over as a demonstration of avelut. Okay, what that is, I could talk about, but I don't want to take our time now. Okay, so he says, Reb Yehuda, on Tisha B'Av we also have to turn the beds over. Okay. And the sages, did not agree with Rabbi Yehuda. Tanya, omu lo Rabbi Yehuda. The sages told Rabbi Yehuda, lidvorecha, according to you, you have to turn the beds over. Ubrois umeinikois, matehe aleim. What will happen to pregnant women and nursing women? You have to be sensitive to them, and they cannot deal with an overturned bed. Okay? Now, the question is, so what? So let's say that everyone should have to turn their beds over, except for Ubus and Manikas. And Ubus and Manikas will not turn their beds over. You know, what type of argument this? See, a priori, if you look at this argument, it looks like, you know what are they talking about? But however, in the backdrop of what you just presented, it's beautiful, according to Tesis. Because the Avelut de Rabim, the Avelut of Tisha B'Av, is a community Avelut. It's not the sum of the individuals, but it's the whole community being involved in the Avelut. So what the Chachomim told Rabbi Yehuda, that if you're going to take a certain part of the community and say you are not part of the Avelut, you cannot call a communal Avelut. So it must be, it's either all or nothing. So it's an amazing thing that since ubrot umonikot, since pregnant women and nursing women could not deal with overturned beds, so our sages say, therefore, the communal avelut of Tisha B'Av does not have overturned beds. For everyone! Because the meaningless performance, a performance of Avelut is only meaningful on Tisha B'Av as much as the whole community is involved. So it's an amazing thing that the Avelut the Rabim could also flip. It could be a cooler over here. And I just want to show you, you can look at principles. That's what the Rav is to try to do. After we understand the text, how to apply the principles and see what they mean. It's amazing what our sages had in mind. Now I want to show you something else. Let's move on. We know that, you know, everyone talks about it, you know. I don't know how many people are successful. Everyone likes this thing for success. It's called chinuch, you know, teaching your child just how to interact with the world, you know. I must thank the Rebbe Nishalem. He's given me a new chance. I have a young little baby now, and I'm going to try to make up for mend my old mistakes. You know, everyone thinks they're able to. We'll see. But there's something called chinuch, okay? Now, in general, in Avelut, we don't find chinuch. For example, if a young child who's not yet bar mitzvah, one of his parents passed away, he doesn't have to sit shiva. Chazal didn't legislate anything on him, and there's no chinuch. However, the amazing thing is, we find chinuch on Tisha B'Av for ketanim. Tisha B'Av, chinuch. And this, you'll see this quote from the Mogen Avram over here. he asked the question, V'tzorach iyun, the Beyodei Simon Shin Pei Dao, the last word on the last three lines, and going to the last, second line from the last, the Bebezdin, the Beyodei Simon Shin Pei Dalet, Posak, the Ein Avelut Lakotin. So how is it that there's Avelus over here? How could it be such a thing? How could we be more stringent on Tisha B'Av? V'nirli, Daba Avelus Terabim, Machmir Tfeh. And he just says they were more stringent on Tisha B'Av. Bekitze, if this child's parent passed away or sibling passed away, he can do whatever he wants. On Tisha B'Av, he has to somehow keep some of the dinim of Tisha B'Av. So you know what the answer is, Rabbi Yisai? You know what the answer is? It's the same thing. It's Avelut Rabim. It's community Avelut. And for some reason, and it's an amazing thing, that in this covenantal community, our sages felt that a youngster is also part of the covenantal community. He's also part of the community. So they also have to. They also have to be involved in the Avelut. And that is this Mogen Avraham. To me, it's irrelevant. He asked, why do I say it's the youngster? It's not the adult. The truth is, it could be the adult, the youngster. It really is irrelevant. It's irrelevant. I didn't mean to say, you're correct on that. I didn't mean to say who the responsibility is on. To me, it's irrelevant. You asked the question this way, I can flip. If I would have said it the other way, you also should have asked me the question, okay? Because that's not the issue. What really is, I'm not interested who's, because the truth is, if in context of what I said before, the question, and truth is what I said was incorrect, and your question was also incorrect, because the community of Avelut, if you think about what I said, it's not a conglomerate of many different individuals who have obligations to fast, but it's a conglomerate of a community, and the obligation is on the community as a whole. So talking about who over here, should it be the parent who has the obligation for the child or the child, is really an irrelevant question, okay? You're correct, what I said was wrong, but thank you so much. Now, next. So this is an amazing thing. A cotton also is involved because he's part of the community. Now, in order to begin to understand some of this, what I'd like to do now is move back. Excuse me. Yeah, there we are. Now, excuse me. Here we are. Now I'd like to, what we're going to have to do over here, so now you've seen, you see what I wanted to show you is some of, is words that a priori have simple meaning, Avelut Rabim, and what can happen, depending on the position you take and what you read into the words, what they actually mean. And it's amazing, okay? Now I want to take another step. I want to begin to understand what is the difference between Avelut Chadasha, new Avelus, personal, very tragedy which occurred at the present, and historical Avelut. Now, the Ramban, he wrote a treatise on Avelut. It's called the Torah to Adam. And he has polemics with the Rabuso, that's the Rif. The Rabbi Yitzchak Farsi, who was the, let's say, a few generations, the Rebbe of the Rambam, this is the one who taught Maimonides, a few generations back, he taught him, okay, whatever. They were of the opinion that the first day of Avelut, we are enjoined from, we have to sit the first day of Shiva from the Torah, from Torah statutes, not from rabbinic statutes. The Ramban is not convinced at all about this. And the Ramban says, and really compares our Avelut to our Ninut, that is the mourning, the mourning at the time of the death itself. And he says at the end a very important line. You see the last line over here, which is in bold. El shma mino she'ein merirut shel v'achrita ki yoimar el belev. When you talk about a tragedy at the present, Rachman al-Islan, someone's parent passed away, or someone's sibling passed away, or someone's child passed away. If you'd ask what it is, you'd ask anyone, you get the same answer as the Ramban. It's a certain pain, a certain emotional pain. I don't think melancholy would be the right expression for it, because I don't believe under any circumstance our sages wanted us, or the Torah wanted us, to be in melancholy. But we can certainly be in pain and have an emotional turmoil, okay? When you're talking about emotional turmoil and being pain, what you call Meriris Halev, Vachisa Kirimah, and the day a person can think, anyone, Rahman al-Islam, who has had a parent who's passed away, just focus back, and it almost embedded in one's subconscious mind that moment where they were hearing the terrible tragedy and the terrible pain. Okay, that is what you call avelut diyachid. It's the emotional pain. Avelut diyachid also, if you look, you'll find, for example, and the Ramban really is stressing this pain, because you see over here, he says that one is not allowed to betroth, that means to marry, to give a woman a ring during the Avelut Diyachid, which is the exact opposite of Tesis. He said, Nimsena Lemaidin, Shekola Avelim, Bein Ish, Bein Isha, Osili Ores, they're not allowed to become, to have what Chazal called Erisin, that a man can't give a ring to this woman if she is an Avela or he's an Ovel. For the first 30 days. And because of this pain, he has to be in a situation, even though there's a minuscule element of happiness, he's enjoined from doing this during the 30 days. What we call Shloshim. However, on Tisha B'Av, he's allowed to get married, according to Ramban. Uma'arsin, that's what he says. You see, on this slide, it says you're allowed to get married, but you're just not allowed to finish it off, to have a chuppah. when the suum vein kaitz me roisu my timer mishum de eisen bloy su the leka simcha. It's not the amount of simcha that we will be enjoined from, but there must be some element of simcha because we enjoined from doing it during shloshim. So the Ramban a priori is taking Rashi's side, or at least that avelut the yochid is more keel, which maybe tastes, but avelut the yochid is more keel, and he says that Erisin, because the issue is the feeling belave. And you can't say, you see, once you take, let's say like this. Once you say that the nucleus of avelut is the feeling in my heart, okay? So it's an open and shut case. If I ask you, what feeling do I have in my heart about the destruction of the temple? You know, everyone says, Im eshka, im lo ala es yushalayim, alosh simchot, simchot. Okay, everyone, yushalayim, people talk about it, people make it their political agenda, you know, whatever they want, okay? But the emotional pain that they have at the present day, because Yerushalayim was, there was destruction almost 2,000 years ago, okay? It's not the same as a parent dying, okay? So if you're going to take the definition of avelut as that feeling, that pain in my heart, it's very difficult to make a case that the avelut of Tisha B'av is more stringent. It's a rough job. Let's now show you something more. Yeah. Here's something in the Talmud, Moikotten Chavzayin Omid Bet. Rabbi Yochanan is quoted saying, everyone is obligated to stand up for a Nossi. A Nossi, like Rabbeinu HaKodesh, Rabbi Yehuda Nossi, the head of Sanhedrin. Everyone has to stand up for the head of Sanhedrin, no matter who he is, okay? Except for two people. An Ovel and a Chayla, okay? An Ovel and a person who's sick, okay? What I want to focus on is what would happen if a Nossi would walk past us on Tisha B'Av, we have to stand up. Okay? How do you look at this issue? I just want to show you back and forth. I want to show you how this can play in and out and back and forth, okay? The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Hakol Chayovin La'amor Mipnei Nossi, Chutz Mi'Ovel V'Chayla. So I want to tell you something, what the Rav developed here. The Rav used to call a person who was an Ovel, he used to call him a Gavra Han Ovel, a Gavra Ha Ovel. A Gavra is a Russian Aramaic, is the person who is a mourner. You know, a priori, he hasn't added anything or told us anything. He used to use this as a word, as a catchphrase, to tell us a lot more. He used to somehow use some words, and there was a lot of meaning in them, and I want to explain to you what he had meaning in them. You see, there's a very interesting thing, for example. The Rambam does something which is amazing. We all know that avelut is something called shiva. the opinion of the Ramban is that this Avelut is only Drabonon. All the different things we are joined to do is only Drabonon. What the Torah tells us is to have this feeling in our heart, okay? In fact, the Ramban says in Sefer Mitzvahs, one is not allowed to eat Ma'aseh Sheni unless he is happy. He says, therefore, you're not allowed to eat Ma'aseh Sheni Ba'aninut, because you're not happy. And he has a separate something telling us to enjoin, a separate precept to enjoin us from having Ma'aseh Sheni. Okay, we'll see exactly what it is, what it goes under. It's not one tayak. Okay, whatever. The Rav used to say and define this merirut shebelev. He used to call it a gavra novel. That the gavra, the person himself, used to call him a gavra novel. It really, to him, it just expressed that this person, his persona is defined by being overtaken by the emotional overflow of being in pain, the gavron ovo. So he said something amazing. He said that according to the Rambam, even though the Torah might legislate that he has to do certain things and not do certain things on the first day of Avelut, okay? However, during the rest of the days of Avelut, it's only for our sages, okay? The Rav, however, said, and the sages have happened to be Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is Mesaken, the Yerushalmi says, and the Rambam says, it was a takona, Moshe Rabbeinu, Shiva of Avelut, and Shiva Simei Mishnah. That's what the Rambam says. However, the Rambam says, as the Rav used to say, that there's a gavra in Ovel, all Shiva. How could it be? Nihugi Avelus are only one day. There's a gavra in Ovel, it's almost metaphysics. The gavra in Ovel called Shiva. What does that mean? So the Rav used to say, and he used to quote a Rambam in Hilchos Bias HaMikdash, in the end of the second parak, that in Ovel, eino mishaleach korbanos of kol Shiva. An Ovel cannot send a korban to the Mikdash, a sacrifice, the whole 7 days. And if you read the Rambam carefully, if he sends it, there's no ritzui. The korban kilu does not help him in any way. The issue of ritzui is a Torah issue. So the Rav said, you see, the gavra novel, this gavra cannot, in a person in such pain, should not be a person sending korbanos to the Mikdash, and the gavron ovel is enjoined from sending korbanos, and if he sends it, it's not mechaper. The korbanos are not meratzef. They're not valid korbanos. The Rav continued and said that the reason why an ovel, a mourner, is not allowed to, should not stand up for a nasi, or any Talmud Chochma walks in, because the gavra in Ovel, because of his pain, the gavra in Ovel, he is not a person who stands up. In fact, I found this in Shvus Yaakov in a tshuva, similar to what the Rav said. You see this tshuva on the bottom of quoting the Gemara. Hine halavush kosav hatam lohodi ein ovel v'chile oimdim b'bnei nosi b'bnei shetudim b'tzaharom. Okay? That's very nice. So Lavush said, this is what the Rav used to say, Tzaram, the Rav used to call, there's no Gavron Ovel. There's a Gavron Ovel, but in Tisha B'Av, there's no Gavron Ovel. So the logical conclusion should be, on Tisha B'Av, since he's not in pain, he does stand up. And he does stand up for the Nasi, and that is exactly what we see here in the Shavus Yaakov. You see, it's easy to say what the point is, v'im ken lefizeh yesh l'chalak v'loyma da'velis yeshon ha'shayni v'leket sa'al kulihai. And that's exactly what he said. In fact, this is what we were trained to do, because if you look many times in the Igris HaGrid, the Rav sends a letter to Father, and Father comments, Rav Moshe Halevi Soloveitchik's father, comments that the idea is brilliant. But what he's added to him, Hadvorim Chseirin Raya, you have to prove it. An idea is good, but it has to be proven. That's what scholarship is about. That's the Rav taught us. And here, I'm just showing you, this should come out, that on Tisha B'Av, you might say that the Avelus is more chomor in the sense that it's a community. The covenant of community is misabel and has new dimensions. But in terms of the personal pain, the personal pain, you don't have that in the community. That's what I started off with the pitgam, what the Advar says, there's no makor in Chazal. Tzarat rabim chatzi nechama. Now I want to explain to you what exactly happens here. There's a very interesting thing happening. Come to this later. Okay, good. Very interesting thing happening. You find, and the Rav used to point out, the timeline of Avelus Yishono and Avelut Chadasha is reversed. And it's a priori topsy-turvy. What happens when tragedy occurs to a person? The first day, he tears kriya, he's completely disheveled, he doesn't know what happened. He's crying, 3 days l'b'chi, then the shiva, the avelus is less intense of shiva in the first 3 days. Then the shloshim, the 30 days, less intense. And as time goes on, it gets even less intense. For father and mother, there's 12 months, okay? What happens in Tisha B'Av? We start in Shivasa B'Tammuz, and we have certain Avelut Miminag, which we'll come and talk about. Then we get to Shvur Shechalboy, and the Avelus gets more intense, or the 9 days, or the week before Tisha B'Av, and then Tisha B'Av itself gets more intense. The timeline is just the opposite. What's going on over here? In fact, what happens during the 3 weeks? The 3 weeks, even if you don't, the 3 weeks is a very strange thing. You know, we have, there was a takana called the Haftarah, okay? And in fact, if you look at the Rambam, there are various Haftarahs for each individual parsha. You, after the Torah reading, you read something called the Haftarah on Shabbos. And it's prescribed for each parsha what to read. However, during the 3 weeks, we don't read what the Rambam prescribes for the parsha. We read something called the three three haftarahs which have to do to promise of destruction. Whether they're in Yirmiyah and Yeshayah. We also find in Shulchan Aruch over here that you don't say Shechiyanu during the 3 weeks. Tov lizoye milom Shechiyanu bein ha-metzorim, al pri or al malbush. Okay. And he quotes at the bottom, Vagoin is chaylik. You know why the goin is chaylik? You see three lines at the bottom. Because the goin says that a person, right after the kvura, if he's given a new pri, or a new, he makes a shechiyano. So how can it be that an ovel makes shechiyano? So the answer is, according to Tesis, community avelus, the time period, it's not only the community takes on new dimensions, but the time period takes on new dimensions. The time of Bein HaMetzorim between Shivosa Batamas and Tisha B'Av has a dimension of a Zman, which is not a Zman of Simcha. And since it's not a Zman of Simcha, we should not say Shechiyano. In Aveilut, it's not the Zman. It's my personal thing. It's not the Zman takes on new dimensions. There's no problem saying Shechiyano. But in Aveilut, the Rabbim, not only the community has new dimensions, but time itself has new dimensions. And the Rav used to say that the Aveilus goes in the opposite direction. How does the mean go in the opposite direction? We start in the 3 weeks, and it's the Avelut of Yud Beis Chodesh. We don't have marriages. That's during Yud Beis Chodesh. It's Yud Beis Chodesh. Then, in the week of Tisha B'Av, or on the 9 days, which is the Minig, then it becomes like Shloshim. Not to wash things, not to wash clothes, the shave. Then, on Tisha B'Av itself, it becomes like Shiva, but not like the first 3 days of Shiva, like the day after, the 3 days to the seventh day of Shiva. Okay, good, very nice, okay. So it's the opposite, okay, it's the opposite. What does all this mean? Why is it the opposite? You see, the Rav used to always say, that if you have something, an emotional feeling, which is somehow moving you, you don't have to, it's not an issue. See, for example, we have now there's a new area called, what we call in Hebrew here in Israel, Chinuch Miuchad. It's called, helping, teaching, learning disabilities, special education, whatever you want to call it, okay? Because someone needs some help, okay? When we have the emotional feeling of tragedy, we don't have to be taught that we have to mourn. The mourning comes by itself. Chazal can guide us how we have to mourn, but the catalyst to mourning is from within. However, if you remember, during historical tragedy, when you talk about historical tragedy, you're not talking about some inner feeling of pain. You're talking something, some historical event, which we have to be taught to interact with, to understand, to feel with. So Chazal are giving us, during the 3 weeks, and during the 9 days, and during the week of Tisha B'Av, and Tisha B'Av itself, a course, a crash course in Avelut, and slowly breaking us in, like you break in, excuse the expression, like you break in a new shoe. We have to get ourselves involved. So during the 3 weeks, Chazal teach us? This slowly, Yud Beis Chodesh, and we slowly bring up and develop within us this feeling of Aveilut. And that's what's going on from 3 weeks to the 9 days of the Shavuot Shechalboy until Tisha B'Av. And even more than that, okay, the Rav, let me show you, even we'll start with over here now. This is why the Rambam has a separate category of Talmud Chochom on Tisha B'Av. That's the Talmud has it, and the Rambam codifies it. That a Talmud Chochom on Tisha B'Av is like the first 3 days of Avelis. And he's enjoying, he doesn't talk, he doesn't get involved. Dovim v'nei nochen kavelim. And if the person comes and says, show them, they shouldn't even react. Talmudei Chachomim have a different dinim. Why do they have different dinim? Because as much as you are learned, that's as much as you can mourn. Mourning is a function of knowledge. Therefore, the Talmud Chochom, who has the greater knowledge, has to mourn more. And that is what's going on over here. Yeah. A yochid doesn't have to be taught. He doesn't have to be taught. You find also, now, let me just show you a posse. We'll come back to this. I want to show you a posse now. Here it is. The Nomi Zecharia, during, at the time after the second temple was rebuilt, he sent the question. They sent the question to Novi Zecharia, do they have to fast during the five fasts midivrei Kabbalah? They have to fast on Shivos Batamos. And what was the way the question was phrased? Ha'evke, should we cry? Should we cry? So the Rav always used to say that we find in Chazal, they say the first 3 days of Avelut is Gimel Yomim Lebechi, for crying. But he said that if you search through halachic literature, you will not find one place, at least in his knowledge, I didn't find that, like I say, that there's an obligation to cry. He said, Gimel Yom L'Bechi is a heter. We are allowed to cry. Crying is a spontaneous expression of the pain from within. And Chazal say, yes, express that pain. However, in historical Avelus, crying is a whole different story. We have to be taught. That's why, if you look at the Haftarah, we are called to cry. People have to teach us how to mourn. People have to teach us what is the significance of this tragedy. Because without understanding the significance, there's no reason to mourn. Crying here is not an expression of an inner pain. Crying is an expression of an intellectual understanding of what happened. This is what the Talmud tells us, and we end keynote with. V'dimoso alechyo, there are tears on her cheek. Dimoso alechyo, this posik, what is it trying to tell us? The Talmud quotes Rabbi Yochanan, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Ke'isha sheboiche shebocha al bal nu'ureho. It's not a plain woman. It's a woman who is betrothed. and her husband was taken from her, Rachmana Litzlan, on the day appointed they were supposed to be married. V'dimosa alechia, ki isha shebocha al bal nu'ureho. And this is what our sages wanted, that through intellectual study, learning and understanding, will understand the significance of the tragedy of the temple, destruction of the temple. What I want to take up, and I don't know if it will be next week or the week after, what exactly are we crying about? And it's a very important question. Are we crying about the physical structure? Are we crying about something more significant? I think that if there's a question or two, I'll take. Otherwise, then one person, I just thought I'd leave 2 minutes at the end. There's someone, because someone might have been sitting very, okay, well, questions? Well, okay, yeah? You know, the issue I wanted to talk about, I didn't talk about the issue of Talmud Torah B'chal, which I had in mind, I just skipped because I wanted to end on time. And Ovel is not allowed, it's Henrik Dom, it's supposed to be quiet. The Ramban has a heter of Seyd HaYoim, to say Kabon, Seyd HaYoim. But the Ovel in Avelus, of individual Avelus, is very different. He's supposed to be quiet. In Avelus, on Tisha B'Av, he's allowed to speak. In fact, you'll find that he has to learn Dvorim Oroyim. It's not only a heter. Hakol Chayovim, a Marzavitri, which I have over here. You'll see, oh, this is a Marzavitri. He says, Avo Shuv Oiskin Hakol Be'iyov. Because that's why this, he's not allowed to, he's not supposed to be quiet. It's not Henok Doim. It's just that which makes him happy. And Dvorim Oroyim, not only is he allowed to learn, but he should learn. Okay, thank you. It was a very important question, and it dealt with something which I didn't discuss. We should all be zeicher, liros benochoma of Yerushalayim, and the Rebbeinu Nishalim should continue to be with us. You have to ask, he's in charge. Yeah. I know. Yeah.